PC Radha Krishna Gova Govinda Shyama Kunda Radha Kada Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Ganga Jamuna Tulasi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Samavet Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yasoda Nandana Brajajana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Brajajana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vana Chari Jamuna Tira Jaya Radha Madhava All glories to some of the bodies. All glories to some of the bodies. All glories to some of the bodies. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasada Buddha Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Sarasvata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pastachadesha Tadane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Bring from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 35, Verse 6. Bhati nastabaka datu palasair Baddamala paribarha vidambaha Kari chet sabala alisa gopai Gasama vayati yatra mukunda. Barhina of peacocks, stabaka with tail feathers, adhatu with colored minerals, palasai with leaves, bandha arranged, malla of a wrestler, paribarha a perho, vidamba imitating, karhichit sometimes. Sabala with Balaram, Ali, my dear Gopi, Sa, he, Gopai, with the cowherd boys, Ga, the cows, Samavahyati, calls, Yatra, when, Mukunda, Lord Mukunda. Translation, my dear Gopi, sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacock feathers, and colored minerals. Then, in the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. At that time, the rivers stop flowing, their waters stunned by the ecstasy they feel as they eagerly wait for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But like us, the rivers are not very pious, and thus they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. Purport, the gopis state here that the sound of Krishna's flute causes even inanimate objects like rivers to become conscious and then stunned in ecstasy. Just as the gopis could not always be in Krishna's physical association, the rivers could not come to the Lord's lotus feet. Although they desired the Lord, their movement was checked by ecstasy, and their arms, their waves, trembled with love of Godhead. So here there's one gopi addressed in the previous verses. Many gopis were addressed, so here one particular gopi is being addressed concerning the playing of Krishna's flute. Here again we have a description of Krishna in the first lines, as in the previous verses. So here he is dressed like a wrestler. And the details are given here. He has minerals, dyes, different colored dyes, mineral dyes smeared on his body. He's decorated with a peacock feather. And he's accompanied by the cowherd boys and Balaram. And he's calling the cows. And then the rivers, then it describes the effect on the river. So the river stops flowing out of being stunned. In the previous verse, there was a description of how the cows and the deer and other animals become stunned on hearing the flute sound. Here it actually doesn't even mention the flute directly.
And it says he calls the cows, and then the river becomes stunned. Nevertheless, we can assume it's because of the flute sound as well. So the sound of the flute has effect not only on the animals and the devatas and the plants, etc., but also on the inanimate objects like the water of the river. But because of the sound of the flute, the river also acts as a human being would act and becomes stunned with ecstatic love. Of course, in the spiritual world, everything is conscious, so it's not surprising that the rocks or the trees or the water can act differently from it does in this material world. And particularly because of the sound of the flute and Krishna's prema, all the entities there and the environment becomes affected by the sweetness of Krishna. So that's not surprising that the river also responds to the presence of Krishna. In the spiritual world, we have the Supreme Lord. We have his devotees, including his consorts, like Krishna has Radha and the gopis, etc., and other associates as well. And then we have a place. So the places where the pastimes take place, whether it's in Vaikuntha or in Vrindavan or Dwarka or whatever, those particular objects in those places, there's trees in those places, there's houses, etc. And of course, then we have the whole environment with rivers and mountains and trees, etc., sky, clouds, etc. So they're all ingredients for pastimes. If we don't have a place, there can be no pastimes. So we do action in a certain place. So in Vrindavan, we have here, for the large part, is the forest. And there we have various things described. And, of course, in the spiritual world, because everything is spiritual, therefore even the environment, the place is spiritual. It is created through the Sandini Shakti of the Supreme Lord. So it's also spiritual. But we see that we have the potency of Sandini there, representing Sat aspect or existence. And we have Samvit Shakti representing consciousness or Chit, knowledge, consciousness. And we have Ahladini Shakti representing bliss. So we have different levels of consciousness as well. Obviously, everything is chit in the spiritual world, yet we say Sandini is in charge of the sat part of the world and of the spiritual world, and the samvit in charge of the chit consciousness, and Ladini in charge of the bliss element. So the different objects predominate with some of the different shaktis like this. Nevertheless, they all are conscious, and they all have some sort of bliss inherent in them because it's all spiritual. In the spiritual world. But we give them different labels according to predominance of one aspect or the other. Just as we have Brahman is Sat, and Paramatma represents Chit, and Bhagavan represents Ananda. But even in the Sat aspect, we do have Chit as well, obviously, because Brahman has to have consciousness. It cannot be unconscious. It cannot be Achit. And we can say there's some Ananda there, but it's a predominance of the Sat aspect of the Lord. So similarly in the spiritual world, the environment and the rivers and the trees, etc., and even the animals are, I could say, representing less of the conscious than the bliss aspect. And they more act as props for the Lord's pastimes with his devotees. Though they are props, they still can respond to the Lord because they are conscious as well. They're not like the objects of the material world, but they act like objects, so therefore they are restrained in how they can respond. Nevertheless, within that restraint, they act in response to Krishna and his flute. So in response to the flute, we see that the gopis or the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, they develop sattvika bhavas and whatever as a response. They develop ecstatic symptoms. So to some degree, the rivers and the rocks, etc., would also have to exhibit something in terms of ecstasy, but not to the same extent. And therefore, they're not classed in the same way. And therefore, we don't call Krishna having rasa with the rocks or the river or whatever like that. We describe rasa in relation to cowherd boys or gopis or Nanda and Yasoda, etc., but not with the rocks and whatever. But nevertheless, there is a relationship there, and there's some bliss inherent in it. But predominance is for the human figures, with jivas and nitya-siddhas and sadhana-siddhas, etc., who have developed consciousness and developed awareness and develop activity and develop intelligence, and they express that in their rasa. So they're somewhat limited with the rivers and other elements that serve the Lord in his pastimes. Nevertheless, they have to express themselves some way. So, usually the sattvika bhavas are an expression of some unusual symptoms from beyond the ordinary. So we have tears, or we have perspiration or quivering of the body. These are not normal symptoms of a person, but in extreme circumstances we get these different symptoms. And that includes being stunned and fainting. So the river can express itself very nicely in terms of being stunned by stopping its flow, because naturally it flows. The river is flowing, and it can stop flowing. So that will express its being stunned. Not so difficult. Other, of course, other symptoms it cannot express. How could it express crying? It's already water, so it can't really do that. Of course, trembling it could also do with the waves. It could tremble like this, like the waves. And we see that with the trees, the leaves start quivering as if the wind is blowing on them. So it expresses the trembling sensation. The trees can express tears through sap flowing from the trunks and the twigs, etc. The trees, of course, cannot be, they can't really move. Anyway, and they don't move, so they can't express being stunned or being fainted, really. They can express a few of the other symptoms. So, according to the objects, they express themselves differently. So the rivers flow, and then they stop the flow, so that expresses some sort of being stunned, stumba, that ecstatic symptom. And that expresses their joy on hearing Krishna's flute. And here it says, not only they hear the flute, but they become eagerly, they wait for the wind, which will bring the dust from Krishna's lotus feet to the river. So this is expresses some disadvantage. The rivers cannot move about freely. They move on the riverbed, and they can't move through the forest or into the village, etc. So they have to wait. That is their nature. They can't move beyond the border, their banks. So they have to wait for the wind to come. And then the dust from Krishna's lotus feet comes there. So this is a bit of indirect association with the Lord. Nevertheless, this is what they become eager for, because they can't aspire for much more than that. Of course, sometimes we see how Krishna comes to the river and then he bathes in the river. So then there's direct association there. But that's not all the time. It's an occasional affair. So here, at least they get a chance to associate with Krishna by getting the dust from carried on the wind from his lotus feet. So there's some aspiration for association, but at the same time, they are very limited in how they can approach the Lord, so this is a disadvantage for them. So the gopis express themselves as, they identify themselves with the river, because the river is limited in how it can approach the Lord. It cannot directly approach them. So therefore, the river is, of course, considered to be impious. because lower living entities that cannot express themselves properly, their lower consciousness, are considered to be lower births, and that is due to sinful activities and less punya. And then the more elevated you are with more intelligence and better body, etc., then you have more punyas. So due to bad or lack of punyas and sinful activity, we have rivers manifesting, which means limited in how they can associate with Krishna. So the gopis identify themselves with the rivers. We are like the rivers. We have been impious. We have low births because even though we're human beings, we are limited in how we can approach Krishna. So the limitation is not like the rivers because they can walk around, but they are limited because of their position. They are living in the village. They have parents. Some of them have husbands, etc. So they have to follow certain rules of Dharma, etc., and respect those rules. So this is their limitation. They cannot act freely in relation to Krishna. So they identify themselves as being a very, very low birth because they cannot freely interact with Krishna. In some verses they express that, oh, the cowherd boys are much more fortunate than us because they don't have this restriction of rules of Dharma to follow. They just freely talk to Krishna, joke with Krishna, etc. They don't have to hide anything. But the gopis always have to be very, very careful that they maintain the rules, so they consider themselves less pious than the cowherd boys. Here they're thinking that we are like the rivers even. We're not even, much less than cowherd boys or whatever. We're down at the level of the rivers. We're so limited. We have to wait until Krishna approaches us somehow. In this way they express their impiety. So this is a symptom of their sense of humility or dānya. They feel themselves very, very fallen and low in relation to the Lord. On the other hand, we know that they're also the highest. They are the highest of the personalities in Vrindavan. But at the same time, they think of themselves as being very, very low. So here they can think of themselves like the rivers. Because they can't even approach Krishna freely. We see that in the previous verses, we talk about the animals, the cows and the deer, etc. They're also not restricted. But the river is more restricted, so therefore they identify more with the rivers than not with other living entities because of the restrictions put on themselves. This is the an expression of their their humility, but also the humility also expresses the greatness of their love, the intensity of their love. We have an expression of great longing to meet with Krishna, and then we have the obstacle to that is their rules of Dharma, etc., which prevent them. So when they see the various other entities of Vrindavan associating with the Lord, they put all of these entities in a higher position because they have, in one sense, less restrictions than others. But there's also a reason for this particular position of the gopis. And that is that they're put in this position to show the intensity of their love. That though they do have these restrictions, just like the rivers are bound by the banks, they have the rules of Dharma to follow and fear of elders, criticism, etc. But ultimately, they ignore that in favor of pleasing Krishna. So in other words, their attraction to Krishna is more than their observation of the rules of Dharma and all therefore they overcome all of these obstacles. And this is something that the rivers cannot do. The rivers cannot go beyond their bounds, etc. The animals are also restricted. They don't go beyond their particular nature as animals and start speaking or whatever and having a different, a higher elevated rasa with Krishna. So they stay within their limitations. So the gopis are, in one sense, limited by conventions, but they overcome that in order to meet with Krishna. So that is an expression of the intensity of their love. It overcomes all obstacles. So though they lament and consider themselves very fallen, as in this verse, even that lamentation and separation from Krishna and not meeting him freely, that is also part of the highest bliss. It is, we shouldn't think of it as anything material. So though they experience some sort of pain and separation, it is part of the highest bliss. Therefore, we cannot criticize them as being materialistic or anything for lamenting, because it is separation from Krishna. So generally, for all of the different rasas, it describes prema in meeting the Lord and prema in separation. The two aspects are there, so it's all part of prema. So even in Shanta Rasa, we have separation from the Lord and meeting the Lord. Not seeing the Lord and seeing the Lord. Two aspects of Shanta Rasa. And of course, with Dasya and Sakya and Vatsalya, then we have meeting the Lord and separation from the Lord and longing to see him, whatever like that. And it's part of prema. So similarly for the gopis, we have separation from the Lord and meeting the Lord. And we have the same with the even in Dwarka, with the queens of Dwarka. There is separation from Krishna and there's meeting with Krishna, both of there. And it's all part of prema. So in the separation part, there's obvious some sort of lamentation, whether it is Shanta or Dasya or Sakya or Vatsalya or Madhurya. There's some sort of feeling of lamentation and pain because of that separation. And of course, the longer the separation, the more the pain is experienced. As when Krishna goes to Mathura and Dwarka, then it's a long separation and greater pain. Otherwise, there's a short separation. Nevertheless, there's that feeling of lamentation and pain in all the different devotees. But it's part of prema. So within prema, it is natural that in separation, then that type of feeling will arise. So we should not criticize that or consider it material. It is part of the spiritual world and part of prema itself, and it's another side of prema. So within that, even within that separation and the pain of separation, there is a feeling of bliss, which is difficult for us to understand. And within the meeting of Krishna, there's a feeling of separation also. Krishna gives that as one excuse for not going back to Vrindavan when he's in Dwarka. So anyway, even if I go there, they'll simply be full of pain, because then they'll be fearing that I'll go away again. So they get more pain. And so even when they're with me, they'll be feeling pain also. So how can I go there? It's not going to solve the problem. And even when it is described with the queens of Dwarka, when they're playing in the water with Krishna and Dwarka, then in great ecstasy, they think that Krishna's not even there anymore. It's another type of separation when Krishna's not absent at all. And out of great confusion, they think that Krishna's not there, and they start lamenting even when he is there. So there's various aspects of meeting also which are like separation. So in meeting or in separation, we get opposite symptoms. In separation, we get some bliss, and in meeting, we get some separation also and lamentation. But it's all part of the bliss of the spiritual world and the bliss of rasa. So here they're lamenting their separation from the Lord and their restriction on them in different in their situation. Here Krishna is addressed as Mukunda. So one meaning of Mukunda is one who gives liberation, moksha. But obviously the gopis are not thinking of Krishna as blessing them with impersonal liberation, but Of course, he does what he does. He frees them. He should free them from the restrictions that are placed on them. In other words, he should meet with them somehow or other and stop this type of separation and the obstacles that produce the separation. So it is a prayer to Krishna to meet with him. There's another meaning of Mukunda also, that he has teeth which are like white, like jasmine flowers, the buds of the jasmine flower. So in other words, when he smiles and he shows the whiteness of his teeth, so it describes Krishna's smiling face as well. So in other words, it represents the attractive nature of Krishna as well. So in this way, the gopis are doing this kirtan, remembering Krishna by describing his features and how various entities respond to that in different ways. And in this case, they're lamenting their position by similarity to the rivers, by being restricted or whatever from seeing him. So this is obviously a confession to another gopi. It's not in front of the elders or Yashoda, but it's to the gopis. They're expressing this separation from Krishna. Not necessarily. We have the chit shakti of the Lord producing thing. That's separate from the jiva shakti. So we say it is substance which is conscious. We have jivas which are conscious also, but they also have a particular identity as an entity, and they have are capable of perceiving things very clearly, experiencing things and doing things, etc. So the objects of the spiritual world have consciousness, but it's less developed, we can say. Less focus. So therefore, we don't have higher intelligence and whatever like that. So that is why it's described that this description of the rasa, or the ecstasy of the plants and the river, etc., is somewhat projected by the gopis, because they don't really have rasa. Their consciousness is limited, their intelligence is very, very limited as such, and we don't even see particles of individual consciousness as such manifesting. So it's somewhat of an imposition of rasa upon the river and the trees, etc. Well, there may be souls there, but at the same time, we just have the chit shakti of the Lord and the samvit shakti of the Lord producing consciousness, so it doesn't have to focus on individuals as such.
Their prema for the Lord is different.
There could be jivas as well, I'm saying, but then, if we have a house, is the house a jiva, or is the individual bricks of a house a jivas, or is the roofing and tiles on the roof a jiva each? Now it's a little bit complicated to think of it in that way. In Brahma Samhita it says that the houses are made of chintamani.
Yeah, it is
stone. So it doesn't necessarily jivas. It's just some spiritual substance as such.
Or because of it is spiritual, that's why you say that it is full of conscious. Because of the spiritual. Normally, whatever we see, because of it is spiritual all. No, whatever we see in the spiritual, everything is spiritual. Because of that, we say, okay, see, then in the sense that it is spiritual, that it is conscious.
Yeah, and of course, it's not covered with ignorance, as everything is. The jivas are covered with ignorance, and all the matter is ignorant as such, as ignorance. And it produces ignorance. But spiritual world, matter does not, the matter there in the spiritual world does not produce ignorance. It doesn't cover over anything. It doesn't hide anything. It doesn't conceal anything,
In the material world, there is something like rocks and some dust. No, it doesn't have that much consciousness, but in the spiritual it is there. But how can you compare it, this material world, dust, rocks, and spiritual rocks and dust is similar,
Well, similarity then that the rocks there also act as non-moving things, or just like the animals there act like the animals here in one sense. the cows act like cows and they give milk, and the deer have horns and they wander around in the forest like that. They don't live in houses. They don't, you know, they don't have families, raise families in the same way. You know, they follow those characteristics of certain animals, and the rocks act like rocks and the mountains act like mountains under normal circumstances.
No, you see, you know, these 84 lakh species are there. The 84 lakh, so the rocks is not there.
Yeah.
Rocks is not there. So you can say the rock is completely different.
Yeah.
The rock is completely different than other living entities. Means like, you know, although it is a rock, also is
In the spiritual world.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, the rocks are more limited and the rivers are more limited than the plants, and the plants are more limited than the animals. Just as I say, in the material world, different objects have certain characteristics. So in the spiritual world, they follow that more. That's the same pattern. Huh? So the rocks are more limited than the trees, for instance. Huh? They're both non-moving, but the rocks, they don't produce flowers or fruit or anything. So at least in the spiritual world, the plants may produce fruit and flowers, etc., leaves, etc., but the rocks don't just sit there. They don't do anything. So they're more limited. It's obviously much less.
Can one rock express it to the other rock that I am feeling so and so, or one tree, another tree?
No, well, they don't. You see, they don't, because they're less conscious. So Shanta Rasa belongs to actual entities. So we have sages in the spiritual world who realize the Lord. They're being influenced by jnana or whatever, so they have their devotees in the spiritual world. So sometimes they're in separation, so they feel separated. They're not seeing the Lord, and they have some slight longing to see Him. And then at certain times they see Him, and they get some bliss from that, and they get some ecstatic symptoms from that as well. Well, the stone in the spiritual world, there's no problem for the stones melting in one sense, because it's all spiritual, and they can to some degree change their nature in exceptional cases, though normally they don't. In material world, very difficult.
Separation meeting. There is a separation when Krishna meets the gopis, and there is again separation when he is not there. You know, both ways there is a separation. There is always fear. There is always fear exists in the spiritual world also that Krishna might be separated.
Well, it is a fear generated from attachment to the Lord. It's not a fear like in the material world. The fear is generated by attachment to your body and danger to your body or whatever. That's what it's in the fear in the spiritual world is related to Krishna and separation from Krishna.
Maharaj, in the spiritual world, do they cook and eat?
Yeah, yeah. There's elaborate descriptions of...
No gas.
No. They have firewood there. There's elaborate descriptions of Rohini and Yasoda and the gopis cooking for Krishna, preparing, and then Krishna eats it.
But in material world, we eat for the purpose of energy. In spiritual world, what is the purpose?
There it is only for pastimes. Yeah? In other words, they don't have to sleep at night. They don't have, because there's no ignorance as such, but they have a day and a night, and they go to sleep at night and they wake up in the morning, but it is not tamogun sleep like here. Huh? And similarly, they have meals. They eat in the morning, they eat at noon, they eat in the evening, but they have spiritual bodies, so they don't have to maintain themselves with food. But for pastimes, they have these eating and other activities going on.
Maharaj, you mean to say in material world, people sleep, it is because of ignorance, or the body is designed...
Well, it's tired, and then sleep is considered to be the mode of ignorance, because there's lack of awareness. One is awareness is limited, we have deep sleep and we have dream state. So in that sense it's tamogun. Similar, but of course it can be of altar as well. It can be different as well.